Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 33 of the A1 Auto Body Podcast with your host Nick Sands. Today I have on my buddy Kale Madden, and he is also a commercial fleet painter. He paints everything from, you know, Peterbilts, Kenworths, Internationals, all the way up to like giant earth-moving dump trucks that are two stories tall. He's a super cool dude, very knowledgeable, knows what he's talking about, and I had a blast talking with him. There's us truck painters are few and far between, so it's always nice to connect. I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and if you could do me a favor, leave me a 5-star review or a 1-star review if it sucks, and just do me a favor and let me know why you left that review. I would really appreciate it. I hope you guys have a wonderful day and enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to the A1 Auto Body Podcast with your host Nick Sands. I hope you guys are having a great day. Today I have on my buddy Kale Madden. And he is a truck painter out of, I'm actually not sure, where are you out of, Kale?
Walcott, Iowa.
Walcott, Iowa. I was going to say Iowa too, and then I second-guessed myself. I should have just gone with it. And you are a truck, I said painter, but really you do pretty much everything, right?
Yeah, pretty much everything. I do most of the jobs I do start to finish, but mainly I do most of the painting.
And do you specifically work on trucks, or do you mostly, or do you work on cars and trucks?
Our shop actually does, we have two shops, actually. We have a shop that does cars and trucks, and then we have, the shop that I work at, which does, semis and heavy equipment, and basically anything and everything that needs painted or sandblasted.
That's the better shop to work in anyways, right?
Yep, oh yeah. Yeah, I definitely prefer. I worked on the car side for 9 or 10 years or so, and I definitely prefer working on the trucks after doing it for a while now. So,
what do you prefer about working on trucks?
More money. It seems to be a lot easier. I like the Imron paint system that we use on them. Just more satisfying work, I guess.
It's funny how it's easier because it's such big trucks, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
I think
it's kind of intimidating at first, but once you get, you know, once you do something that's like really big, and then everything else just seems, you know, like nothing.
Do you remember what the first job you worked on was when you moved over to trucks?
Probably the first big job I did was Kenworth. T2000 a roll of wire rolled off at the front of the trailer and smashed the whole back of the cab in.
Oh.
So we had to replace the whole back of the cab and the floor, and it was a very intensive job.
Isn't it amazing how much damage those things can sustain and still not be totaled?
Oh, it is. Absolutely. I mean, one job it was the rollover, and we replaced the whole cab. We just got a whole nother cab and sleeper, and we just replaced everything on it.
That's the craziest, isn't it? What, do you remember what it was?
It was an International.
Yeah. We've done that a couple times with Internationals. It's like, it's very, like, you don't think about the cab being, like, independent from the frame. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how little it holds it on there. You know, you have a couple mounts in the front and a couple airbags in the back. And
then all of a sudden you don't have a truck anymore.
Yeah.
And that must have been probably one of the biggest jobs you've done? Is that rollovers like that?
Yeah, I've done a few rollovers, and I've done a lot of day cab conversions and stuff like that that are pretty labor-intensive jobs, too.
What was it like switching over from, like, a car shop where you're only spraying, and I actually talk about this a lot, but where cars, you know, you guys aren't, you're not spraying as much, like, you know, like a quart is a lot in a car shop, whereas on a truck, you're shooting. You sent me a picture of you with a dump truck that was, like, one of those massive earth-moving dump trucks.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that must take 10, 15 gallons of paint.
Oh yeah, easily.
So,
but then by the time you add primer and
Oh, yeah. And I wasn't even including Primer in that. I was thinking, you must have to, I'm trying to think, like, just a normal dump truck usually takes about 6 hours for us to paint. What's something like that take to paint?
Well, there was three of us painting it when we did that, and it probably took 4 or 5 hours.
Three of you guys painting at the same time?
Yeah.
What's that like? Because we only paint one person at a time. We very rarely are putting more than one person in the booth. It must, you guys must all have to kind of be on the same wavelength to make it all kind of come out the same, right?
Yeah, we've done a lot of big jobs like that, a couple of D6 and D8 dozers and stuff, and it's kind of hard for one person to get around it before you've got a lot of dry spots and stuff, so you kind of have to have a couple helpers with you sometimes to get around it before you have a lot of dry spots in it and stuff like that.
Yeah, even on smaller dump trucks, sometimes if you don't get right into it, you can end up with, like, dry overspray and stuff on the other side of the truck just, like, by the time you get around it.
Oh, yeah. If I run into that a lot, you gotta be able to move pretty quick, be pretty nimble, and be able to climb up and down the ladder and move the ladder. And
You must be running 14-foot ladders in your booth, right, for something like that?
We have just a couple of, like, the roll-around. They're probably about 14-foot.
Basically as tall as they can get, right?
Yeah.
And you said you use Imron.
Yeah, yep.
I
love it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Have you shot other, like, industrial paints? Systems before?
We do use, like I said, the PPG Amerlock on some jobs. We use that. I really like that too. It's a good thick primer. But other than that, I've really only ever sprayed DuPont and Exalta products.
Yeah, a lot of guys love the Imron system. I get a lot of that.
It's great. Once you get the hang of it, it's really great. I went to the school up in Chicago for the industrial paint part of it, and it was great.
It is a little bit. It's funny how, like, when you get into the flow of a system like that, that switching over to another system can be hard.
Yeah.
Recently, we have had some trucks coming through that we're actually spraying Imron on, and we're used to using the Delfleet, the PPG Delfleet line, and So I had told you on the live video, but the first time we did it, there's an additive you're supposed to add that's accelerator.
Yeah.
And we didn't realize we were supposed to add it because the thing only came, I think, with the hardener or whatever, and we didn't realize that it needed the accelerator too. So it took like 2 days to cure fully.
Yep. Yeah, that stuff can be pretty tricky though too. If you use too much of it, it dries really fast. So.
Have you ever had any issues with that, like, as far as, like, your gun, cleaning out your guns and stuff, where you end up with a wad of paint in your gun that is...
not so much with the gun, but I've had problems where if you put too much in, it dries too fast, and it wants to chemical pop or lose its shine a little bit. So you want to be careful with it. Just follow the recommendations.
That's always the most important thing. There's so many guys out there who... and I don't want to single out older people, but a lot of older guys in the industry, they kind of have their own way of doing things.
Oh,
and
yeah.
A lot of times maybe it's not the same as the recommendation, and they go that route. And a lot of them have good results, but I always worry that there's going to, you know what I mean? It's only going to take one bad time.
Yeah, you definitely have to be willing to adapt and to learn new things, new techniques and stuff like that to be able to stay successful in this business, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Especially with the speed that things are changing recently. It seems like every year there's a new something that you need to learn, especially with all, like, the aluminum stuff coming out now and all the...
These self-piercing rivets are just a nightmare.
Oh, isn't that...
I don't know how much you've dealt with those, but they're just no fun at all.
I've been lucky enough. I usually don't have to use those. We use them sometimes. But yeah, those things can be a nightmare. There's a There's a it's like when you're riveting something on, I'm sure you've run into this where you're maybe working on like a Kenworth and you're trying to rivet, or a Peterbilt, and you're trying to rivet it back together. And
yeah,
sometimes those rivets, if you're using, you know, whatever the grip range is, if you grab the wrong rivet, it's like you pop it and then it's still loose.
Yeah.
And then you have this rivet that's like too loose that you got to try and cut off without damaging the new panel.
Yep, and that and the hucks. I don't mind using the hucks. A lot of the Peterbilts, they're all hucked together, and I think that's a pretty good system. But this new self-piercing is—it's very hard to cut them off.
Yeah.
And
are you? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Not bad.
I was actually gonna say, why don't we jump back a little bit and talk about how you got into painting and bodywork in the first place?
Well, when I was getting out of high school, first of all, my dad was always a mechanic and grew up around that. And then when it came time for me to just pick a career, I wanted to work on cars, but the industry was going more towards the electrical side of things, and I'm not into electronics at all. I don't understand it very well, and I
neither
thought
does anybody.
That the auto body industry would be a better suited career choice for me.
And did you go to school for it, or did you just get right into a shop?
I went to the community college to the auto body program. Got a job right after or during while I worked there. So I did probably half of my schooling. I was at the shop working, you know, get signed out, and, you know, you can learn more in the shop than you can here. So.
Oh, absolutely. And what was, so you graduated and then you, or this, and you were already working in the shop you're still working in today?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool. So you stayed in pretty much one shop the whole time?
There was a brief time I worked at a couple other small shops, and me and a buddy actually had our own shop for a little while.
Oh, really? That's cool. What was that like?
It was more than I wanted to do.
I know. We have, so at our shop, we have me, my dad, and my brother. And luckily, my brother is very smart when it comes to, like, the paperwork and the business stuff and like the, you know, the actual running the shop, because I don't know what we would do if, I mean, I couldn't do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just want to work.
Exactly. I want to work on cars. I don't want to do paperwork about cars.
Yeah.
That's when I always feel a little silly when people message me on Instagram and they ask for an estimate or something. And I'm like, dude, you do not want me giving you an estimate because they're not going to be right.
Yeah.
I can barely schedule my day, and people want, you know, I can't schedule. I think right now we're scheduling like 3 or 4 weeks out. There's no way. I can't think that far ahead.
Oh yeah. We're the same way. We're a couple months out at least.
That's one of the
nice. There's so much stuff sitting there to do that there's just not enough shop space.
Not enough shop space, not enough people who are willing and able to do it.
Oh yes. That's definitely a problem. There's definitely a lack of motivated people that want to work and want to learn.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we're dealing with that in, you know, New England, and I feel like Iowa, it must be even more difficult because you guys, I would think, and I don't know this for sure, but you guys must not have as many people in Iowa as we have in New Hampshire, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we're not huge. I live in the Quad Cities. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Quad Cities or not.
The only Quad City I've ever heard of was in Star Wars.
No, it's right on the Mississippi River, right on the west side of the Mississippi River. The Quad Cities, it's Davenport, Bettendorf, Rock Island, and Moline. So,
I don't know any of those. So, but they're big cities.
It's a pretty decent sized city. It's smaller than Chicago.
I think the other thing that kind of hurts the industry too, or at least our industry, is that I think a lot of people don't think about painting trucks when they, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people just take for granted the fact that trucks are just painted, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people realize that there's like body shops specifically set up just to paint big trucks.
Yeah, it's definitely a good niche to be in, and we're right along Interstate 80, and it's Iowa 80 truck stop. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that. It's dubbed the world's largest truck stop.
I have heard of that.
So yeah, we're just about a half a mile from that from there. So we got a pretty good little place to have a business like this.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's fantastic that you're kind of like right down the street from a major hub like that. Do you guys pull a lot of business from being nearby there?
Not a whole lot. We do get like a few, like if there's a wreck that's nearby, like on the interstate or a tire blowout or something like that, that needs, you know, the hood repaired or headlights repaired or something, they tow those there quite a bit, but not a whole lot specifically just from the truck stop or anything like that.
Right. So it sounds like you do pretty much a little bit of everything in the shop, even though I know you said your main thing is painting.
Yep.
What does your typical day look like when you're working?
Well, I usually just try to be able to work on something as long as I can and try to paint stuff towards the end of the day.
Do you guys all work together on maybe one or two jobs, or are you guys all spread out on separate jobs?
It kind of depends. I mean, sometimes we work on a job all together, and sometimes I'll get a job that I'll have all of myself that I'll do from start to finish. And same with other guys. They'll have jobs that they'll do start to finish. You know, it just kind of depends on the size of the job and the if the customer needs it back and, you know, in a rush job or something like that.
That's one of the weird things about working on trucks is even when you work on a job from start to finish, it's never really just you're working on that truck alone. Because you're always, at least in my shop, we're always constantly asking each other for a hand for a minute, helping us move something.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Put something on. So even when you say, like, oh, yeah, no, this is my job from start to finish, it's your job, but I mean, there's a lot of hands in that pot, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's probably a lot different than working on cars, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. It's, you know, mounting a gas tank or something on a truck is, you know,
awful.
Definitely takes a couple people to do it.
Miserable.
Yeah.
Especially, well, for me, I always, whenever we get a gas tank in, I always dread having to take it off because those things never come off well.
Oh, no.
It's always an effort. I always am amazed at people who do, you know, polishing.
Oh, yeah.
Because that, I mean, unless the, I don't know if the tanks come to them already off the truck or what, but that must be, I mean, that must take up like 3/4 of the job is just taking the thing off and putting it back on.
Yeah, we have a local guy here that we have polished tanks for us and wheels, and I mean, his shop is just so just dirty, just black. Everything is just black, and just you see him after he's polished a set of wheels, and it's like he looks like he's been in a coal mine.
I've done it, and it is awful. It's even worse than it looks. I did a bumper one time, and it was the first time I had ever really polished anything, and you know, I was like, because I wear glasses, so I wasn't even thinking that I was getting the stuff sprayed all over me, you know? And so I finished it up, and I went in and looked, and everyone was kind of giving me funny looks, and I looked in the mirror, and it was just like, I mean, it, my whole face, like all my hair had like crap in it and stuff. It was awful. God bless those people who do that. That's
yeah, unfortunately, not had to do any of that, just a little bit of polishing if there's a scratch or something in it, but nothing major.
I mean, it looks nice, and that's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
Do Do you have a preference on what kind of truck you like to work on?
I usually find that the Peterbilts are the easiest to work on.
Really? That's hilarious, because I actually find that the Peterbilts are often the hardest to work on.
I mean, I like the way that the hoods are put together. I like that you can replace, you know, each individual part of the hood. And
yeah,
Plus, they're just my favorite looking trucks. I think they're the best.
I mean, they definitely look
the
coolest. They definitely look the coolest. I like working on internationals. Maybe it's just because we've done so much of them, but they just, I mean, I can take apart pretty much an entire international cab in like an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah. The smaller ones, those are definitely really easy to work on.
Yeah, that's what.
And the doors and the mirrors and everything, they're super easy.
What kills me about the Peterbilt is everything is riveted together, like we were saying.
Yeah.
And, like, if those things don't want to come off, that's always a nightmare. Or, like, if you have to worry about, you know, because you can't always just hit them with your air hammer. Sometimes it's...
Yeah, I usually just use the cutoff wheel and just cut the hucks off on the backside and
yeah, that's
pop
what,
them out.
That's what we try to do. Anyways, it for me, it, at least on the hood, it's pretty easy. Everything's pretty accessible. But a lot of time, I mean, I've had... I just don't. I mean, I don't mind working on them, but I would much rather work on international. I like nuts and bolts.
I just worked on a Volvo, a newer Volvo, a couple months ago, and it was a nightmare. The bolts on it, like every other bolt was a different size, and it was just.
That's always so weird.
I couldn't understand why they had five different size bolts on one piece holding it on.
Yeah, that kind of stuff like that happens a lot in like Volvos and I think Max do that too, where they have like, and it makes sense, they're owned by the same company, but like a piece like you were saying, it'll be held on, it'll be like all 12s, and then it'll the last one will be a 10, or like a Phillips,
yeah,
or something like completely just out of left field. Like you brought your socket set out, and now you have this piece half hanging off. You got to reattach it so you can go get the right tools to finish taking it off.
Yeah, I had to rebuild the def tank on it, and that was, I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of rebuilding like a def tank before, but
oh yeah,
that was way more work than I imagined it would be.
I know, they look so easy, don't they?
Yeah.
You think it's just probably like a couple straps and a couple hoses in the back, and it pops off, and that's it.
Yeah, it's got all the coolant running through it, and all this and that, and everything else. And
I would say working on like fuel tanks, side tanks, that's like my least favorite thing to do. That's the kind of stuff I always try to give away to the other guys. Especially, I don't know what it is, but the smell of like, it's not so much when it's in trucks and stuff, but when like diesel gets on your hands, you know what I mean? I just feel, I just can't stand the smell. Like, you smell for the rest of the day, like all your clothes smell, your boots will smell for a week.
Yeah.
Every time you turn the heater on in your car, your whole car smells like diesel from it hitting your shoes. Filling up, yeah, God, I hate swapping tanks. That's why, like I said, I like to leave that for the younger guys. Let them do it.
Yep.
How many guys do you have working in your shop?
Right now there's four of us. There's four workers, and then we have like our manager guy that works there.
Oh, that's a pretty good team, though.
Yeah. So.
And how many trucks in, you know, on average do you think you guys are putting out a week?
On a good week, two or three, maybe four. Depends on, you know, the size of the job and.
That's still pretty good. I mean, that's one truck a person a week. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, how much work really goes into a truck, like, you know, working on it, especially like some of the bigger trucks or like replacing a back panel, how much work really goes into doing something like that.
That's a ton. That international that I recently did, we replaced the entire back panel and the whole side panel. And
oh,
I mean, that
I feel
was,
for you.
I mean, I think that job had 120 some hours in it, and I mean, it probably took me 70 actual hours to do it. And I mean, it's crazy. I've kicked the whole interior out. And
that's the biggest time.
Try to keep track of all that. And
yeah, pulling those, that's what I was just actually going to say was a lot. I don't think people realize that to even take that back panel off, pretty much the entire sleeper section of that cab has to be disassembled and taken out of the truck.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw you kept one bed in there. I always do that. I don't know why. By the time I get the second bed out, I'm so like, I'm just like, it's fine. I'll just cover it with a fire blanket if I have to cut or weld.
Well, I was worried that if I didn't keep it in there, I'd forget to put it in there and then we'd not be able to get it in.
I can honestly say that I have dealt with that before. I ended up having to take out a seat. Take out the passenger seat to fit it through the thing because I forgot to put it in before I reassembled the back.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Sometimes, you know, you get, by the time it's, I mean, the jobs always come out perfect, but they don't always go as easy as we make it look, right?
Yeah, definitely.
For you, working on trucks, is it kind of the bigger the better? It seems like you really like working on, like, the real big sleepers and the dump trucks and stuff. Is that just kind of how you're wired, or do you prefer kind of working on the smaller trucks a little bit?
I mean, if I had it my way, I'd paint white day cabs all day long. But I do like the challenge of a bigger job every now and then, like the blue one that I just did. You know, doing something like that's definitely a challenge, and it's good to see it come out in the end and have the customer be happy with it. And
so
but I definitely wouldn't want to do those every week.
No, definitely not. Well, what did we do? We did something this week that was I had to replace floorboard. I'm replacing floorboards in a truck right now, and that's one of those jobs that should be super, super, so like in the back of a box truck, the floorboards.
Oh, yes, yeah.
That's one of those jobs that should be super easy because, I mean, it's essentially just screws through the wood into the cross member. You should just be able to screw them out. But it never goes that easy because literally every single screw is either going to strip or break. And then it's stuck in the wood. And then you have to try and cut it and get it out and drill it out. Oh, my God, it's... Like, those floorboards are, like...
And that wood is very hard.
Yeah, isn't it? It's weird. It doesn't even, like... Because, you know, you torch it. You torch it and stuff. It doesn't even catch fire. It's, like, so crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't even catch fire. It just kind of, like...
Well, it's like, soaked in something. It's some sort of African wood. I can't remember what it's called, but... I've actually dealt with that a lot on drop-deck trailers that we've painted.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, you know, there's a couple hundred Torx head bolts holding it on. And if you get 50 of them out without breaking them off, you're like ecstatic.
The Snap-on dealer does not like seeing you on that week. You got like 10
we just go to Menards and buy a bunch of the cheap, they have these double headed cheap ones because there's ones that seem to last better than the Snap-on ones even. So.
Yeah, that's how I feel about what I always buy mine from Husky, and they always, I mean, they're always warranted anyways, but I feel like those ones last, you know, at least as long as the snap-ons, if not longer.
Yeah.
That's cool that you get to do such a, I mean, I know because I'm doing it too, but it's just, isn't it fun that you get to do like so many different things, at least when you go in and...
It's definitely, you know, one week you're working on a semi and the next week you're working on a bulldozer and then next week you're working on a Penske truck that somebody rips the roof off of going under a bridge that was too low.
That
we've been on a streak of those. I think we've done 7 of them or so in the last 6 months.
Yeah, probably our biggest thing is box work. We do so much box work. I love doing box work. That's actually my favorite kind of work to do. But we got in, I think it was either last year or the year before, we got in this truck that it hit a bridge. And I swear to God, it had sheared off. Like the bridge would, I mean, I don't know how this happened, because the bridge must have been like a foot lower than the truck. It was like way too low. And I swear to God, he hit it and he sheared off like the Z post up, like probably like 8 inches off the top of the Z post the whole way down, like literally halfway down the truck. I cannot imagine like what this driver was thinking. Like, he must have hit it and then just like thought he could maybe push his way under it or something. I don't know, but like, I've never seen a truck so extensively screwed up. I've never changed so much on a truck before. I mean, we had to change like every panel, both top rails, the whole front, the whole roof, pretty much.
Yeah, I'll send you some pictures of one that we did. The guy did the same thing. I mean, just starting the whole thing all the way completely off. I mean, it actually bent the lower rails on both sides. Because it hit it so hard.
Yeah, like pushed it down.
Yeah. I mean, the front wheels had to have came off the ground of the truck. I mean, they had to have.
But like, what, like, I can't, either the guy must be going like 100 miles an hour, you know what I mean? Or.
We have a bridge here that's like at the bottom of a big hill. It's a one way and it's the truck eating bridge. I mean, there are signs and lights and warning signals and people still hit it. I mean, every couple of months, somebody usually hits it.
Boy, you guys are situated right in like the middle of like body shop heaven with the bridge and then the truck stop down the street.
Yeah.
Keeping you guys in work. Your boss is probably paying to like keep that bridge low. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trying to get another one added to the town. So you have been doing this for about 15 years, you said.
Yep.
I think the most important question that I can ask any painter is, are you a Sada guy or an Iwata guy?
DeVilbiss.
Oh man. I've only ever seen really one other DeVilbiss guy, and that's that guy, Luis Morales.
Yeah.
He's a big DeVilbiss guy, and you're a DeVilbiss guy too, huh?
Yeah, I used to spray with an Iwata, but I started using the DeVilbiss once I started painting trucks again, and I love it. I love them.
When I first started painting, we used like old gravity, or not gravity fed, siphon fed guns.
Mm-hmm.
That weren't even like, they weren't the HVLP or anything. They were just normal siphon fed RP gun.
Mm-hmm.
And we had DeVilbiss, and we also I preferred the Sharp 775. But my brother, he did some amazing painting with that DeVilbiss. They definitely make nice guns. I think that they're probably the most underrated gun company.
Yeah, I think for the price comparison, they're equally as good.
Yeah, that's one of the big reasons. I mean, we're pretty much an Iwata shop. We have some Sadas, but the price of, I mean, you can get like three good Iwatas for one Sada. You know what I mean? It's like it's ridiculous. And the Sadas, if you lose one piece, you have to replace the whole system. It's a ridiculous setup.
I've watched people spray with the Sadas, and they just seem like they have so much like overspray in the air, like when they're spraying, and it's weird to me.
Yeah, they do.
They say the transfer efficiency is good, but it just doesn't look like it is.
I think that, I don't know, they say the atomization is better too, but honestly, I've never really noticed like a difference, I guess. Like I said, we use Iwata, and if we really thought the Sadas would be better, we would get them. We just don't think that they are. And it sounds like you have the same.
I sprayed with the LPH 400 for a long time, and I loved it, but.
But you switched over anyways.
Yeah.
You hung up that gun and you started in the DeVilbiss path, huh?
Yeah.
Actually, that's do you know anything about like the history of those spray guns?
Which ones?
DeVilbiss.
Not a whole lot. I mean, I know they've been around. They used to make like perfume sprayers and stuff back in the day, I think.
He was actually a dentist to start.
Really?
Yeah, and he had to spray the first like job he used it on was they were doing like the underground walls of a oh my god, I can't believe I remember. It was like a stadium or something. You know how stadiums have like an underground like tunnels and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
He had to spray that, and that was like his first job he did with them. But yeah, he had been a dentist to start, and that's how he understood like the hydraulic and air system, is because all the dentist tools are run on the same system as the DeVilba spray guns were originally.
Oh.
And the first spray guns were kind of more like a pressure pot than a gun. But it's a really interesting story if you ever get a chance to learn about it.
Yeah,
it's pretty
cool. To read up on that a little bit.
But yeah, they were the first gun. My grandfather had one of the original ones that was like a hand pot, like you said, it was almost like a perfume bottle.
Yeah.
Imagine having a paintball car like that.
I can't imagine it.
We've been around
busting out the brush and roller.
Seriously, we've actually been a shop long enough that so we bought the shop from another guy, whose dad was the person who started it. And A1 Auto Body actually used to be a brush and roller shop when it first started. Yeah, so we've been around for a long time. And we didn't work on trucks. We did cars originally. I don't remember why we switched over. I think we just because we had the big doors and no one else did, so we started doing trucks.
How long have you guys been in business?
We have owned the shop, I think, 12 or 13 years. And then before that, the previous owner owned it for, I think he got it when he was 20. So he owned it for like 40 years, I think. I mean, I believe it started in 1961, was when the shop first opened its doors.
Okay.
No, it must have been before that. I don't remember. I think maybe it was 1961. It's been a long time. Because before it was a body shop, it was a junkyard.
Huh.
So, like, we have a park right across the street from the shop, and if you go over there, every once in a while, you'll find, like, a random piece of metal. This is because there's still like all kinds of old scrap buried under there. And now kids play there.
Nice.
Yeah, that's exciting. But there's always people in the summer especially, there's probably a couple times a week there's people over there with metal detectors, and they don't realize it used to be a junkyard, so they're constantly finding stuff and digging down, and it's all just junk. The poor guys probably think that they're finding some treasure, but it's really just garbage. So what's the name of your shop, by the way?
It's Walcott Collision.
Walcott Collision.
Yep.
Have you lived in Iowa your whole life?
Yep. Lived in Davenport, Iowa my whole life.
Oh, that's cool. I've never been to Iowa. Is it nice? What's your guys' weather there like? Is it like New England kind of?
Right now it's like 4 degrees. Little,
oh my god!
Couple inches of snow.
So you must be looking for
a pretty mild winter this year. Last year we got a ton of snow. Nah, it was really, really cold last year. I think we had one day that it was like -40 last year here.
Jesus Christ. Terrible.
But, they say in Iowa, if you don't like the weather, just wait around 10 minutes and it'll change. So
they say the exact same thing about New England. And funny story, I actually have always hated that saying ever since I was a kid. I don't know. I've always thought maybe it's just because, like, I've heard it so many times, but I'm always, every time I hear it, it just, like, grates my nerves. It looks like you guys have a lot of nice hiking and stuff and that kind of thing out there, because it looks like you do a lot of that.
Yeah, I do a lot of bike riding mainly, camping. I do Ragbri, which is a bike ride all the way across Iowa, week
that's
long.
Cool. How far is that?
Usually between like 400 and 450 miles.
Wow.
So
that's pretty cool.
Takes about a week. Do it all self-contained. I carry all my own camping gear and stuff on my bike and
really?
Food
that's,
and
that's incredible.
Stuff like that.
I didn't realize that at all. So how long have you been doing that for?
I think I've done 7 now. 7 years I've done it.
And how did you first get into that?
I met a guy at a shop that I worked at for a short period of time, and he was telling me about it, and it sounded very appealing, and I just kind of hooked up with him, and that was kind of all she wrote. Got addicted to it.
And were you already riding bikes at that time?
I've always kind of been into bikes. I used to do like BMX riding, you know, when I was younger, and I never really stopped riding a bike, I guess. It's always been kind of a constant thing in my life.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's good to have something like that, you know what I mean? So that way when you get out of the shop, you have something to kind of take your mind off of the day.
Yep.
So what's it like? So you said it takes about a week to finish that. Is it a race or is it just like a thing?
It's just a ride. It's not a race at all. It's just basically a week-long party.
What's it like kind of, you know, at the end of that, when after you've been out riding for a week and, you know, you must grow very close to the people that you go with, right? Or do you just go alone?
There's usually about 10,000, 10,000-15,000 people that do it.
Holy shit. How have I never heard of this thing?
Yeah, you have to look it up. Yeah, but I have just a group of friends that I ride with here locally, and then there's people from other parts of the state that I've met that I've become, you know, kind of your once-a-year friends. You know, you get to see them once a year and hang out for a week and then wait till next year to see him again.
That's awesome, though. So when you first got into that, were you kind of expecting it to be like a party like that? You know what I mean? Or were you expecting like it to be, I don't know. Some people, I think, take things like that very seriously. And sometimes maybe going in there just for fun is, I don't know, not as not seen as in such a positive light. Have you found that at all when you're doing that?
There's definitely different types of people that do it. I mean, there's the people that get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and get on their bike and ride as fast as they can to the you know, the end route for the day. And then there's your families that have their kids that are just leisurely riding as far as they can. And then you kind of have the people that hang back towards the back and party a little bit more and stop it.
That's
stop
where you're
and have
at?
A few roadsides. And, yep, that's generally where I tend to be at.
So kids do it too?
Yeah, there's a lot of families that do it.
This is amazing.
A lot of them don't do like the whole thing. They'll maybe do, you know, a day or two or something like that.
Man, that's so cool though. What a cool, it must be a really cool experience, especially doing it like seven years in a row now. You must be kind of an old hat at it.
Yep, I've learned a few tricks here and there.
What's it feel like to finish something like that, even if it's not a race? Like, I would think just traveling that far on a bike, you know, you're doing something that most people will never do in their life. You know, what's that feel like?
It's a really good sense of accomplishment. A few years ago, it actually, it goes from west to east, so it starts on the west side of Iowa and ends up the Mississippi River. And the town I live in, Davenport, is right on the river, so I actually got to ride just right to my house, you know. So it's just kind of cool to, like, get dropped off on the other side of the state and just ride all the way to your house.
That is really cool. I used to ride not anything like that, but, you know, take my bike out on Saturday and just go, you know, wherever. I'd be gone all day, and then I'd come back, you know, whenever I felt like it. There was always there's definitely something about being on a bike that's different than being in a car, because you're a lot more exposed, obviously, but you're also, it's weird because you're a lot more vulnerable, but there's also a lot less rules that pertain to you. So you can pretty much do whatever you want, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a different perspective on your surroundings and stuff.
I was not the kind of bike rider that people driving liked. You know, I was always, you know, darting in and out of traffic and, you know, running red lights and doing all the stuff you're not supposed to because, you know, why not? But it's just weird. You think that, like, being on a bike, you're going to try and be more safe. But that's never the case. It always feels like – it actually feels like you're more in control of a bike than you are in a car.
Yep.
I think that is all the questions I have for you today, man.
All right. Well,
I really appreciate you doing this with me. And, you know, you would do amazing, amazing work out there. And I really – you know, you're one of the few that I go to and check out regularly because there's not a lot of guys like us who are working on trucks every day. So it's always nice to see other people doing it because, I mean, there's lots and lots of painters on Instagram that you can find and on the internet you can find, but very few. I mean, like, I can literally think of five, maybe not even that many, maybe four off the top of my head. And that's pretty much it.
Well, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate that. You guys do great work yourself over there.
Thank you very much. We also appreciate that. Actually, with that in mind, let me ask you one more question. Is there anywhere – so obviously it seems like you're the kind of person who's always trying to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anywhere that – or anything you do or anywhere you go that gives you the opportunity to work with other people and learn from other people, or are you more kind of teaching yourself and just kind of trying to get better on your own?
I definitely try to get better on my own. I mean, I want every job to be better and more done more efficiently than the last one. But I did last year, I did go to the Exalta school up in Chicago, and I would love to go back to all the classes and do the master certification.
When you're working on
a goal,
when you go to something like that, is that also done on big trucks or in the school, is it more cars?
The class that I went to was, here, let me see what the name of it was. It was transportation finishes course. So it's geared towards the Imron paint, and that's what's meant to be sprayed on the semi version of it. So when we were there, we sprayed like some semi hoods that they had, you know.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
I think each class is kind of, you know, different. I mean, they have the waterborne class and I'm not sure what all the other ones are, to be honest.
I know. Well, they have the same thing at the PPG school. They have like 10 million courses that you can take. So now that's actually all the questions I have for you, sir. Thank you very much for coming on today, Kale. I really appreciate it.
All right, sounds good. Look forward to talking to you.
I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for checking out the episode. I hope that you enjoyed it, and I hope that you enjoyed my conversation with Kale. If you could do me a favor and just leave me a review. I don't care how many stars you give me, as long as you give me an honest review, and you just let me know if you didn't like it, what you didn't like about it, so I can try and change that. I hope you guys have a wonderful night, and I'll talk to you soon.